Visible change. Visible progress. Sacrifice comfort. Gain control. Work is worship. Rest is rebellion. Obedience over innovation.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Low Life Podcast. I am Chris Miller, also known as Group Roof, and I am here with the Cyberpunk Librarian.
Hey, how y'all doing Dan. Tonight, everyone?
And our guest for tonight's show is Evo Terra. Welcome, Evo.
Well, hello, gentlemen. Thank you very much for having me.
So I want to give a little introduction to who Evo Terra is, because in this age where podcasting has gotten so vast, it is possible that someone might not know who you are, Evo. And as strange as that may seem, I want to give you a little introduction. Evo has been doing this since 2004, if I remember correctly.
Yep. October 14th, 2004 is the exact day I published out the 40th podcast in the world.
So we're going back a ways. Evo is one of the I'm going to say grand old men, but boy, that sounds really awful. we are some of the elders of podcasting. Evo, could you tell us a little bit about how you kind of got into this? I know you started off as a radio show, did you not?
Yeah, that's the whole thing happened. But we're talking fake radio, or internet radio, which is the same thing as being fake radio. Yeah, I was asked to be on an internet radio show back in 2002, so prior to the word podcasting even existing. And the show I was on, we interviewed science fiction authors. That's what it was. It was called The Dragon Page. It was this internet radio show that went on a server inside of an independent bookstore in Phoenix. And that was connected to, I don't know, probably just a regular Cox internet connection to the internet. And if you knew where the address was, you could go listen to this show that we produced every single week. Kind of sounds like a podcast, doesn't it? But it wasn't, because you had to listen like at a specific time, right? The way radio works today. Yep, that's how it got started.
You know, and it's funny, I don't know if I ever told you this, but we have this in common, because I worked in 97, I worked for an online bookstore called Bookstacks Unlimited out of Cleveland. It was the first bookstore on the web that we know of. We were doing business on Telnet back in 92.
Oh, man.
And I mean, like taking credit cards and stuff, very insecure. I'm sure people would have had a field day. Mm. But we had a real audio stream, and we would interview authors, much like you did for your show. Mm-hmm. And I got to meet Neil Gaiman that way, and Robert Zubrin of the Case for Mars. And it was quite a time when you would have to, you know, do all the real audio encoding and get it out there. And like you said, people would have to tune in at a specific time. And it was like terrestrial radio, but not.
Yeah, very much so. What we did for our audience, because we like you, we were talking to a whole bunch of authors, and where else are you going to find this information? It's not like you're going to listen to Arthur C. Clarke on a regular radio station, right? So the hardcore nerds fell in love with our show. It is an independent, you know, this internet radio show. But they said, well, you have these recordings. Why can I only listen to it on the radio station? So it took us about, I don't know, 3 days before we realized, yeah, that's kind of dumb. Why don't we just put this together as we'll make a blog. This was back when pre WordPress, movable type was the CMS that we were using at the time. And so we had a blog, and we just embedded a real audio player. So that's how people could listen to the show without waiting for it to be, you know, whatever time the broadcast was. So that was pretty popular. We got a lot of people listening that way, especially when we had, like, you know, Will Wheaton on one of our episodes. That might have crashed servers in a big way. It certainly did. So yeah, we had a blog, and we had these MP3 files that were attached to it. So when we discovered podcasting on October the 12th is when we discovered podcasting. 2 days later, we had a podcast, but not just a podcast. We had a podcast that had 150 some odd episodes already done. So when we went live, nice back catalog we got there. So we became a podcast very easily because we were already doing all the stuff. All I had to do was figure out how to get the enclosure tag into the RSS feed. And Chris, you know firsthand what a fantastic programmer I am. So I was able to do that with relative ease, which is why it took me 2 days to figure it out, because I'm not a programmer at all. But I got it working, and here we are.
Fantastic. I'll tell you what, I remember catching – I'm trying to, was it Dragon Page? Was that the original show? Cause I know there was Dragon Page, and then there was Cover to Cover, and it kind of had a couple of different iterations.
We did. We changed names a few times because, you know, we didn't know what we wanted to be when we grew up. But yes, we began as the Dragon Page, but then we started doing a real live radio show at the biggest, the largest AM radio station in the Southwest. And that was KFYI right here in Phoenix, Arizona, 550 AM, the Valley's talk station. And they wanted our show, but they didn't want to syndicate our show. They wanted us to do a live show. So we came in and did the thing we called Dragon Page Live Fire, because that's clever. Or it was in 2025, whatever time it was. So that means, well, okay, now we have the Dragon Page Live Fire. So now we have to rename the Dragon Page to Dragon Page Cover to Cover. So that was about books, where Dragon Page Live Fire was about anything, you know, random stuff that just sci-fi based we could talk about. And then we started another show called Slice of Sci-Fi, which was specifically about media properties like television and movies, as opposed to just, you know, Dragon Page Cover to Cover was books. Slice of Sci-Fi was visual media. And then Dragon Page Live Fire was our live crazy show. Not to be outdone, we then decided to do a third show called Winging It.
Mm-hmm. And, I remember Winging It. Oh, my God.
Luckily, I've taken all those episodes down. they are gone, burned down. If anybody listening has a copy of them, burn those copies. They shall not see the light of day. That's how it all began.
And that is, I remember discovering Dragon Page and Slice of Sci-Fi and eventually Winging It. I got to listen to some of the first episodes of Winging It. And that was more or less how you and I met, was because, well, I remember Murr Lafferty having a small segment on the show. That's where Geek Fu Action Grip got started, if
That's
I remember
right.
correctly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you and I met because I remember you coming on and having this idea.
I really want to hear your take on this, because I'm going to give my take after you're done, because we haven't talked about this in 20 years.
No, we have not.
Yeah. So go for it.
So the funny story was I was getting into podcasting. I was listening to you guys. I was listening to a few other things. I think it was probably Leo Laporte was out there and all that. But it was like you say, there was like 40 or 50 of us, and I was kicking around starting my own. And you came on one day and was talking about this. Wouldn't it be neat to be able to do serialized fiction? Wouldn't it be neat to do audiobooks? And you were, I think it was, you were talking about T. I think it was Scott had come to you and Paul, if I remember correctly, and maybe Mark Jeffries.
Those
were the first four that I recall. And you came on, and I think I dropped an email to you that day because I had been working on something similar, just kind of on my own, an idea that would allow serialized fiction to be meted out on a schedule. The problem with serialized fiction, as I saw it, because when you brought it up, I was like, the first thing I thought of was, when someone subscribes, they're going to start with chapter 13 because it goes in reverse chronological order. And I was like, I bet I can write an engine that would track when a person hit the RSS feed and then just added one onto their feed so they could start from the beginning and get the whole thing in order and, you know, on a schedule that they wanted. And I think I dropped you a line that day. And if I remember correctly, and I'm hoping I'm not making this a legend or anything, but my recollection is I had that thing written, the basis, in like a weekend after you and I talked, and we had a prototype up in about a week.
Oh, Chris, your memory is friggin' spot on, man. That's exactly what happened. I mean, literally it is. Here's my perspective, right? Mm-hmm. T. Morris, Scott Sigler, Mark Jeffries, all three came to me. All three sent me emails because I had interviewed all of them previously on the Dragon Page and become friends with a lot. I mean, that was a fun thing about the Dragon Page. I got to be friends with all sorts of authors, mostly underpublished authors, but all sorts of authors. So I had reached out to them a month or so before, and I said, I don't know what this means for you guys, but this podcasting thing is cool. And got to remember, guys, this is back before Amazon had ebooks. This was when Amazon used to do things like sell books, like physical copies of books and other sorts of things. So there was no Amazon Kindle. You could not upload your stuff and automatically listen to it. Really, all you could do was get a big publisher interested. Good luck. Go the Vanity Press route. Terrible idea. Or do print on demand, which now your trade paperback costs $40, right? So that's untenable for a lot of people. So I'm talking to these authors, again, the three I mentioned right there. And I told all of them, there's something here for you. I don't know what it is. And then that week, before I said that to you, Chris, that week, all three of them reached out to me with the same idea. I got a book. I wrote it. It's done. Can I just read it into a microphone one chapter at a time, or at least as a podcast? And I said, that's brilliant. They said, yeah, but I don't know how to do that. I said, well, I know how to do that part, the technical stuff on how to make a podcast out of it. Let's do it. And that's when I said on the show, I've got this idea for something I'm calling a podio book. I just need someone to develop it for me. And it's like, I don't know, 5 seconds later, bing, Chris Miller has said, I can do that. And I said, prove it. And like that weekend, proved it. So yeah, you're spot on. Our memories are either equally flawed or on point.
No, I just – it was the first time I'd ever reached out to someone that I'd met on the internet to do a project with like that. I did not know you from Adam, and I was pretty sure that someone else would have beat me to the punch. But it was a real delight getting to work with you and T and pull that thing together. And, you know, Patio Books has moved on from the internet. It's right. It's part of
Scribble.
Scribble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can go back if you want to go through the Internet Archive and take a look at it. But Patio Books was a major leaping off point for a lot of authors in the world. Mm-hmm. We Correct. Helped a number of people build their audiences, and these folks that are now New York Times bestselling authors and have been doing this for two decades now. They owe us nothing. I don't want to take any credit for their success, but I want to say maybe we helped a little bit, and that was always the goal. The model for Patio Books was a lot like what we do at Neon Dystopia. It was all about getting independent fiction out there. Mm-hmm. The majority of the funds, I believe it started at 50%, but then we upped to 75% of all donations because it was all donation based.
Right.
We did not charge anything for this. You could listen for free if you wanted. But if people donated, everybody got 75% of whatever came in went back to those authors.
Yep.
And it was an amazing thing and an amazing time. And it lasted how long?
Until 2015. So, 2015, you know, we were 10 years. Were a decade. And all those, most of those old shows, there's like 700 that are available. So you can go to, you know, any of your podcast directories and listen to a lot of those if you want to hear that. But that was also back in the time, you know, we have to talk about the fact that, and yes, everything you said, by the way, I want to hit this about you and I knew from the beginning. I think one of the first things we said is this is not designed to make money. We're not here. Yes. To make any money. You and I had both worked with enough independent authors. Back then, independent authors were getting screwed nine ways to Sunday. Everybody wanted to charge them for certain things. And I hated that. I hated the leeches out there taking people who are extremely creative and just trying to suck money out of them. Mm. So that's my, it's probably why you and I got along so well, because I know you feel exactly the same way about that.
Yep.
So we were very clear up front. We're just going to do this with our own effort. We're going to keep the technology as simple as we possibly can. I'm going to convince Libsyn to give us free hosting, and we're just going to do this thing to see what happens. That all worked. But a big shift has happened. You know, mm-hmm. Back then, if you went to, like, let's say it was 2015 and you wanted to go listen to a fiction podcast, chances are you were listening to what audiobooks were. Usually the author narrating their book one chapter at a time into a microphone, maybe with some music, you know, definitely with an intro and an outro, but, you know, very, very minimal production value. Yeah, they go through edit, so they're not listening to all the mistakes that were made, obviously. They do a little bit of that. But that was it. And a very few, you know, maybe 10%, I don't know what the number is, were audio drama, where a full cast production of, you know, 18 different actors and great Foley, sound effects, all of the rest of that. The author had to go back and convert their novel into a screenplay, mm-hmm. basically, you know, and that... There were very few of those for one reason. Those are hard. You know, really.
You can confirm. Yeah.
You can narrate your book one chapter at a time, and you can probably push an episode out a week. One episode a week of a full cast audio drama means a lot of hours. You know, mm-hmm. hundreds of hours going to production of one of those things. And where we're at today, the reverse has happened. Now, most of the audio fiction out there is – if some sort of a full cast, bigger production, but there's still plenty of room for the independents. And I know we're going to talk about some of that more, but it to me, it is such a vast shift from where it started to where we are today.
Well, and that's cool, because one of the reasons I wanted to have you on with, you know, not only did you literally write the book on podcasting, UNT, but, you know, you are now a professor of podcasting.
That's right.
I mean, who'd have called that?
No way. I mean, no one. Remember this, Chris. I think I probably told you this story, but I'll relay it here again for the audience and for Dan's edification as well. When I got a phone call, I'm driving home. I used to live about 100 miles was my daily commute because I was stupid. And I got a phone call on the way home from T. Morris. T says, "Hey, I've been asked to write a book about podcasting." And I said, "Why did they ask you?" Now, he had written several books previously. He was an author, not just fiction or fantasy stuff that he writes, but he'd written some instructional manuals and some of the nonfiction stuff on, like, I don't know, various programs. And so my "why you" question wasn't about his skill as a writer. It was more about a skill as, dude, I did all of the work. You just did the narration, which is not – I mean, no, that's great, but – who produced and who put the RSS feed? And he said, no. That's why I'm calling you. I want you to be my co-writer on this. I went, oh, okay. But hang on. A book about podcasting? Maybe a pamphlet? I mean, no, I don't understand. How many words? What are they looking for? Word count? He says, I don't know. I'll call you back. Okay. Calls back and again says, they want 266 pages. And I said, that's an oddly specific number, you know, not just a random number, but like a very specific, this is how many. So I said, that's, who's this for? He said, I don't know. Called his agent back, called me back, and he said, it's one of the For Dummies book. And I said, tell him we'll do it. That was it. I mean, no more research done, because, like, do I want to write this book? No, not really. But if I'm going to have a book out there, I'll take the yellow and black one that's on the shelf, right? Because that's the one that's going to get picked up. So, that's how we got to write Podcasting for Dummies back in 2005.
Yeah, crazy. So we've got that. You're in the Podcaster Hall of Fame, class of 2022.
That's correct. I believe that's what it said. No, yes, class 2022. He turned around to look at his displayed Podcast Hall of Fame trophy. That's correct. Yes.
And you're teaching the next, not the next generation, because the next generation was, honestly, it was
– oh, my.
I mean, we're like five generations down because I feel like the third generation was serial, you know, who invented podcasting?
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
No.
But that was, I mean, to talk about serial for a second, I mean, how did you feel about when podcasting hit that big resurgence? When kind of like, it was my impression sitting outside of it because I had stopped podcasting in around 2012. That was when I had, actually 2010, I had moved out to LA. I was working for Mark at Mahalo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just things got crazy. Those were 90 hour weeks at a startup. And it was really hard to do anything.
Asshole too, but I guess that's kind of all startups, but nonetheless. And we're not talking about Mark.
No. That's a whole other show. My time in the digital minds at a startup in LA. But you know, the resurgence that came when Serial kind of kicked up, because I felt like at the time it put podcasting on this whole other plane when like NPR got into the game. Yeah. Was that your impression, or was there a slow buildup that I missed because I wasn't paying attention?
No, I don't think you're far off from that. So, you know, when we go back and look at what happened, it's always fun within the hindsight to figure out what actually happened with things. But, you know, podcasting has been a slow, steady growth as far as people producing shows and people listening to shows. That is a continual trend line upwards. And it has been since day one. We're not seeing any change of that right now, which is great news. What Serial did in 2014, that particular inflection point in podcasting, was that's when the media got interested in podcasting again. Mm-hmm. They were interested in the early days, 2005, 2006, you know, we're getting some press, whatever else. But then it kind of – I won't say all the press went away, but the frenzy went away. And it was just back to creators and listeners, which I'm perfectly happy with, by the way. But Serial – I don't know why. I'm assuming a good publicist more than anything. And also a solidly well-produced show. But look, it wasn't the first solidly well-produced show. It was the first solidly well-produced show that had a budget and had a big, you know, PR team behind it, I think, is what happened.
I think This American Life, I think Ira Glass and that team, I mean, built up significant cachet.
Yeah, they certainly had. And so they could put all of their weight behind it because it was kind of the first thing that it wasn't a NPR show that now has a podcast. This was something that was brand new. This was only this podcast. And it was unlike really any other media that had existed that anybody cared to listen to. I'm sure there are plenty of people who will jump up and tell me, what about? But it really captured the attention of the media, which therefore got attention to everybody else out there. So yeah, a huge resurgence in suddenly interest from new listeners came in, but mostly that media coverage saying, oh yeah, there's this thing called podcasting we forgot about.
Yep. And I remember I still talk to some of the oldsters. I was hanging out with a couple of folks, Hutchins and Selznick, and we all joked about us. It's so great that Serial invented podcasting, isn't it? so nice of them to, you know, because all of us, you know, when it was Serial, and then it was Mark Maron and eventually Rogan and all these guys, and podcasting kind of blossomed into this mainstream thing.
Yeah.
And what has been your, you own a podcast production company, you've done consulting, you've built, you know, you have a marketing background. Mm. How did you see this adoption from like maybe 2015 to now? Like, how has this progressed as a profession, as a way for people to communicate, but also have you also seen it like as an art form develop at all, or is it all just monetized and bullshit now?
Excellent thing to talk about. So let me answer this by telling you where my head was in 2015, what related to podcasting. 2015 is when I sold, I don't know if you could hear the air quotes that I had there, sold podiobooks.com to Scribble, which is an independent publishing company that I had been doing some consulting work for, I don't know, a couple of years before that. Mark Jeffries is the one that introduced me to Scribble originally. So that's when I sold it off to them. Again, sold in the air quotes because I got no cash. And I had been producing a podcast. That was my wife and I were traveling around the world. Don't think I'm independently wealthy. We literally sold everything that we owned, put about 24 grand in the bank, and found a way to travel cheaply. And we can happy to talk about that at some point in time, but we're sticking with mentality of podcasting. I was done podcasting. I said, okay, I'm just going to, I'll do this little show while she and I are traveling. But I don't think it's, I think, you know, it's been doing this for 11 years now. Maybe it's time for me to go do something else. And I remember Serial had already been popped. Serial was already out there for a year, but I'm still thinking, no, I don't think I want to, I don't think I want to do it. So there I am in Bangkok, Thailand in 2016. And I got in the travel blogging community, which is both great and terrible for different reasons. And one of the couples that we had gotten close to, they also were living in Bangkok. They were originally from here in the States. They said, hey, I heard you have a podcast. I have a podcast. And I listened to it for about 6 seconds and stopped listening because it was horrible. I mean, it was just, I mean, forget being raw. I mean, and they were trying to sell this thing off. Their brand was luxury travel. Oof. And it sounded like they were recording it, you know, with cans and string. I mean, it was horrible, just atrocious. And so I said, how are you guys doing? They said, oh, we just record it in our place and we send it off to this person and she makes it sound great. What do you think? I gave them my honest answer, which is why we're not friends anymore, because you know me, Chris, I tend to be honest to a fault. And then another person also connected to us said, hey, can I take you to lunch and talk to you about podcasting? Absolutely. So we go to lunch and Rick's buying me lunch and I'm talking podcasting, this. And he said, yeah. I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to have to manage my own stuff or anything else. I think I'm just going to hire the people that put out that other show. And I said, the fuck you are. That is not happening. How much are you going to charge you? And it was something like $50 an episode. And I said, I'll do it. Just let me do it so that it actually sounds good. And then, Chris, I don't know how the hell this happens, but like in a month, I had three other clients.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, God damn it. I'm a podcast producer now. I never wanted to do this, but I was doing it not charging authors, but you know, these travel bloggers who do have some budget, and I was charging them cheap money to do things. And like, well, God damn it. Now I have a podcast production company, and that was 2016. And now here I am in 2025, still making podcasts, but for businesses, people who have a budget who are going to spend their money anyhow. So it might as well spend it with me.
Very cool. Cause I wonder, a lot of people have gone into this. And there was a gold rush mentality, I think, especially after 2015 of I'm going to get in and I'm going to make a bunch of money on this and we're going to get ads and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And I know that was when I checked out because I remember I really like, and you know, Dan does this and it's one of the reasons I wound up meeting up with the guys here on Low Life is I like people that do it as a passion project. I mean, and everybody would like to make a little money on it. That'd be great. But you know, the artistic and the creative side of it. I mean, those early days were very, very happy times where I discovered an awful lot of great people doing a lot of great stuff.
Yeah.
And when I look out and try to listen, I only listen to a handful of podcasts because they all sound the same now. They're overproduced. Mm-hmm. They've got too many commercials. They're vapid. They don't really seem to care about what they're doing. Mm. And even the good ones wind up getting monetized and then getting dumb. I mean, I just like, I loved 99% Invisible when it was independent, but then they became part of Radiotopia and then they got bought by, I can't remember, was it Stitcher? And, you know, it's practically unlistenable now. People run out of steam and keep going. Yeah. And so, you know, I, one of the reasons that I was really thrilled when CoinOps and Zero and Scum and Dan came and said, would you be interested in joining? Was because this is a creative endeavor with a bunch of artists.
Mm. Yeah.
And that kind of leads me into the excitement that I felt when you and I met back up because we lost touch for a little while. I was, you know, getting divorced, raising kids, doing this, doing that. You were traveling the world. And we met back up to talk about some things and I discovered that you were doing this, the end.fyi thing. Can you tell us about this?
Yeah. I certainly would. So again, you know, I decided I want to get out of podcasting and then I got back into podcasting, but the podcasts I was producing at the time, they're all business-based podcasts. The mm-hmm. great thing about that is there is no expectation of getting 50,000 listeners because most businesses don't have 50,000 customers. They just don't. And so it was never, well, sure, every client would like to grow their show. That wasn't the goal. The goal was more business drivers that I did, which is great, but also soul sucking because I got out of the marketing business on purpose in 2014, and now suddenly I'm back into it again. Mm-hmm. So, but that's fine. It's a way to make money, way to make a living, and it's a fine way. I was doing things I was happy with, but there was no real creativity at that. So, several years ago, I kind of decided to re-immerse myself in the fiction podcasting world, which is where I got started with all of this. And I was frustrated, Chris, when I got into this because while there was all of the passion to do it, and there were plenty of professional shows out there, but like everything in the podcasting world, the vast majority of the content produced is done by amateurs, people sitting around having fun and doing what they want to do. Hmm. But the problem was, a lot of these shows, because they are hard to produce, literally hundreds of hours can go into an episode of a fiction podcast with a fully cast, they don't always make it. And they don't finish the story that they want to listen to. Now, you remember back in the PodioBooks.com days, we saw a huge spike. As soon as that last episode of a patio book was uploaded, downloads spiked. People yep. were waiting until it was over because they wanted to have a binge-ready experience. That just wasn't easy to find out for fiction podcasts. No one had really thought of the idea of maybe we should have a directory that only contains fiction podcasts that are complete to a certain degree. You know, like watching streaming movies or streaming television shows, you can watch those that are releasing as they go, but I had a big download spike when that last episode of Wednesday dropped, right? That's when mm-hmm. I started listening or watching the show. So that's what I wanted to really bring out. And I went to one of the many podcast movements and spent the entire time not talking to all of my friends in podcasting from the beginning, which is what usually happened when I went to a podcast convention, but I spent it all with the fiction podcasters. I hung out in their booths. I talked to them, tried to understand their pains and figure out what's important to them as a creator, right? And then also as a listener, what's the perspective going on? And what I decided was that I am not a fiction podcast creator. I once tried to write a piece of fiction and I sucked at it. I'm great at writing nonfiction, but I cannot do fiction to save my life. So there was nothing I could do to really help the fiction podcasters themselves. They didn't really need a podiobooks.com model. They could do all the stuff on their own. Podcast hosting got a whole lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
As we all know, right? So there wasn't a service I could do for them, but one, and that is showcase their show when it's hit the end. And I went, ooh, that's a clever name for a domain. Surely the end.com is available. So it's called the end.fyi instead. And yeah, I started it as a newsletter to just do it once a week. I'd say, hey, here are some shows that I found that have reached at a season finale or multiple season finales or are fully complete. And that was 164 weeks ago. 165 weeks ago is when I started this. So I can't do the math. I don't know when I started, but I do know I've done it exactly 165 weeks because that's the number of newsletters that I put out. I put out a newsletter every single week that now contains all of the new updates that I've added to the show. And going strong with 1,600 shows or more than that by the time this gets aired that are listed in the directory. Pretty sweet.
That's amazing. I was so excited when I found out about that because, like I said, I've gone through a very dry period. I'm very selective of the things that I listen to. And I've always enjoyed those full cast audio dramas. I remember going back and listening to things like the Metamorph podcast and other full cast productions.
Leviathan
but always
Chronicles?
Being sad. I'm sorry?
Leviathan Chronicles. Remember
Leviathan
that
Chronicles mm-hmm. was near and dear to my heart. You know, but, you know, those were, like you said, were the minority. So when you and I got back together to start working together on some tech projects and I found out about the end, going up there and finding full cast sci-fi, cyberpunk, you know, all kinds of things. And you don't just cover indies. I mean, you've got BBC podcasts in there. You've got, you cover the whole thing.
I try to. You know, the idea behind the end is we want to be the largest directory of completed, or as I'm now saying, binge ready, because what does completed mean after all? So of binge ready audio fiction. That means fiction podcasts. That means audiobooks. That means audio dramas that are either for sale or put up on Bandcamp somewhere. You know, I take a very liberal approach to the word audio fiction. So as long as it's released, achieved at least one season finale, and the artist or the creators are willing to submit the show to us, we're going to add it to the directory, and it's going strong.
That's amazing. That is so cool. But
in classic form, Chris, in classic form, no charge. No charge to be included. No charge to listen. I mean, there might be a charge to listen to one of the ones that's only available on Audible or something like that, but that's not getting me any money. So yeah, this is continuing on my idea of there are certain things in life I want to see in the world, and this is one of them. So I'm just going to do it.
I think that's fantastic. That's that's always been a hallmark of the things that I've seen you do over the years is very passion driven, and I've always appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
So it kind of doesn't end there, though, because a while back you discovered the Fediverse. And for just to explain the Fediverse, I know a number of our listeners already know what this is, but I'm going to go into it anyway. The concept of the Fediverse is there are a number of independent open source projects that kind of work together and talk to one another. This is a very loose definition, but it's things like there is something that is sort of like what Twitter used to be called Mastodon. There is a thing called PeerTube, which is kind of like YouTube. And all of these various things form not an alternate internet necessarily, but it's almost like a little enclave of people who have walked away from the mainstream internet to some degree to build something friendlier, better. I mean, it has its ups and downs. It has its problems. But you got into that as well. How did you wind up coming to that? Was it when Lonnie bought Twitter, or how did you stumble into Mastodon?
Well, that was certainly when I got most interested in Mastodon, but I had joined, podcastindex.org has a podcastindex.social Mastodon account where a bunch of podcasters were talking. And I joined that and didn't really do much of anything because Podcast Index people, in case you're listening, I love all of you, but for Christ's sake, can we stop talking about crypto for a second?
That's a whole
different conversation. They do a lot for the community. I love Podcast Index, but for fuck's sake, moving on. And I wasn't just really into those sorts of conversations, so I kind of let it lapse. But as you said, now suddenly my much beloved Twitter, I think I was like one of the first 100 people on Twitter, like I tend to, I used to be, I don't do this shit anymore. You know, I was pretty hardcore into Twitter and really enjoyed it. And then I got to see it turn into a Nazi bar and said, I can't. And I quit loudly and, you know, canceled my account and did all of the things you're not supposed to do. And I took a page out of Cory Doctorow's playbook. Cory Doctorow is a friend and has informed a whole lot of my decisions. And he said at one point in time, I am not going to spend a second building any sort of community on a platform that is corporately owned. Fuck that. And I went, yeah, I feel the exact same goddamn way. And so I basically killed every social media profile that is corporately owned and said, I'm just going to focus here. Because it's cool. It feels like Google Plus did back in the original days, where you could build your own you want to use the word alternate, and I agree with it, but I want to call it an intentional network.
It's kind of like I agree with you there. It's funny that you bring up Corey, because I was inspired again by Corey, but his book Walk Away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you remember it, but the idea of people that just leave society to go and build something new with the tools from the old.
Yeah.
And I agree with you about, I like intentional. I like the fact that it seems to be more thoughtful. It's not perfect. It never is.
No.
But you got pretty inspired by it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I mean, I was all in, and I really was wanting to, I got too far ahead, to be really honest, you know, because I tend to jump into things with both feet. And I was thinking, man, what we really need to do is so Mastodon is great for getting rid of Twitter. But here I am now in this audio fiction community, and all of that revolves around Reddit. Reddit is in one particular community on Reddit, the audio drama subreddit, which I love very much. And it is a great place to be. It is very welcoming and inviting. It is the only subreddit I pay any attention to, because most of them are toxic shitholes, but not the audio drama subreddit. But it's on Reddit, and it's owned by a Nazi, and we want to get, you know, change something. So I thought, let's make a new thing. Let's use not Lemmy, but whatever. What was the other one called? What did we were trying to do?
Oh, I can't even remember.
I don't remember either.
It was the alternative to Lemmy that wasn't quite baked enough yet. Because I remember when and I and I'm going to say Command Line, you know, when the three of us were working on it, we kept running into, it's just not ready for prime time yet.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the problem with that. And so I kind of gave up those deals. And then I found out that there was one Mastodon server that was originally set up for fiction podcasters called Pod Vibes. The creator of that said, I don't want to keep paying for this. I'm going to shut it down. So I called him up and said, well, just give it to me. You know, just I don't want to buy it from you, because I will certainly take it. I'll give me the domain name and we'll transfer it. And then he said, yeah, let's do that. And then I said, fuck, I don't know how to do that. Chris, Command Line, help. Can you do this? And they said yes, and they did.
Yep. And so podvibes.co, if I remember correctly.
That's it. Yep. Still going.
Looking at it right now.
Still going strong. I mean, it's mostly me. And I try to encourage audio fiction folks that sign up for the end to make an account on Podvibes. And most of them don't. But that's because, you know, look, most independent creatives, it's hard to run a show. I know it. I totally understand. I've had enough podcasts in my life, and still today, that it's hard to run a show, even harder for fiction podcasting. And they want to use social media as a tool to find more listeners. And that's not the prime directive of Mastodon. Mastodon is to build an intentional community, as we talked about previously. And so, yeah, you're going to post something, and if you have no followers, no one's going to see it. Whereas if you have post something on Blue Sky or Twitter or Facebook or whatever, all these algorithms pop up, right? And that's, it is very difficult for me to convince creators why they should build an intentional community. So I don't try to convince them anymore. I'm just happy paying cheaply for that server, knowing that if it goes tits up, I've got people like you who can come help me fix it.
Yeah.
And help me fix it, I mean fix it.
Yeah. And, you know, big shout out to Hugo over at Masto.host. He hosts Pod Vibes. He hosts my server. He hosts Command Line server. I mean,
Hackers.town is over there too.
Hackers.town. Oh, is that where they moved to? Well, that makes a lot of sense. That's good. Great.
Yeah.
So yeah, Hackers.town. I mean, just, I think he's probably the premier host for these things now. Mm-hmm. And he does a fantastic job. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So you've got your finger on the pulse of this.
Oh, God.
I mean, you know, I like you, I don't write a lot of fiction. I keep my hand in it. I just recently sent a piece to Scum, our editor, who was very kind and said I did a good job. Maybe he'll publish it. Maybe he won't. That's fine. Yeah. But like, I'm just kind of getting back into that game. Dan, you have published a lot of fiction on your show. Is that
not half as much as I want? I've been sitting on a whole bunch of shit just because I haven't had the time. Because like Ivo said, I mean, I try and make, I could sit here and read my stories, and into the mic, and it'd be just as good as me talking to you right now.
Right.
Because when it comes to acting, I'm okay. I will never win any awards for my acting. But I don't have the time to, like, you know, manage like a full cast thing. And I would love to, because one of the shows that I'm doing right now, the main character is a woman. And do I have a woman's voice? No, I do not. But I'm not going to go to the effort of trying to find, you know, I don't even want to ask one of my friends, hey, do you want to like narrate this 15-minute episode for me for no money whatsoever?
Yeah.
And something that you said really resonated with me about the passion projects. I am under no illusions that I will make money from my podcasting. It's not even part of the plan.
Right.
I have a Redbubble account where if you really want to go to it, you can buy merch. I have never brought it up on a podcast because it just feels kind of ick. And, you know, I really sympathize with the idea of, you know, trying to make something more out of it than just reading into a microphone. I throw in all kinds of, you know, sound effects, and there's music, and there's, you know, there's breaks and stuff like that in the, in the action. And I basically, I'm not doing anything different. I listen to a lot of old time radio and I'm stealing it.
Yeah.
I am absolutely stealing this shit.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it's the whole thing about doing fiction. I mean, I have no problem writing fiction. I just have a problem recording it, because I can do an episode of Cyberpunk Librarian, which is a nonfiction podcast through and through. I don't think I've ever done any bit of fiction on Cyberpunk Librarian. If I did, it's been so long ago and I am too old that I don't remember it. Mm-hmm. I can do an episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I can have it written in 2 to 3 days. So I could start on Monday, record on Thursday, edit it on Friday, and drop it on Saturday if I felt the need.
Right.
With the fiction stuff, I could start it on Monday, and then I don't fucking do shit with it until 2 months later. Because it's not just the story. It's like, well, there's this scene where there's a gunfight, and there's two characters involved in the gunfight. Well, they don't have the same gun, do they? Uh-huh. So now I gotta find two different gun sounds. Oh, I don't like that one. That one's good. That's a good gun sound. That's gun number one. Now I gotta find gun number two. And it just, the workload, I mean.
Look, that didn't stop John Wick from doing it. Every one of their guns has to be the same because he uses the same bullets and the same clips all around.
Exactly.
But, you know, Dan, I mean, that's, I mean, you've hit on something. You know, I was always amazed. Well, two things. First of all, both of these things are about Scott Sigler. The first is I was always amazed at how he could pump out not only fiction, but his audio, his audio work. Just keep ahead. He didn't do a whole lot with sound effects, and he did have someone doing some of the mix down for him, if I remember correctly, eventually. Yeah. But, you know, it was just, he was singularly minded and he jumped on it, but not everyone was like that. And also Scott Sigler has a terrible female voice, and it's
he's
okay.
He knows it. He's not doing the original Kayla from Earthcore way back in the day. He's gotten away from that.
No. And so, you know, but I think you bring up a good point. I mean, there's only so much work that you can put into this. And even though it's a passion project and even though it's an art form, we're all constrained by that same thing. I remember my first podcast was called Unquiet Desperation, and it was an interview show specifically because I didn't want to do it by myself.
Fair enough.
And because I believed that individual people had interesting stories, and I did maybe 20 of those, and those were good. And eventually I moved on to doing other podcasts with other people. But you know, it's finding the thing that you're passionate about. And I adore the fact that there are people out there that are able, everything from like the stuff that you're doing with Parables of the Vibe, which I am so excited to hear the second episode of.
So am I. It'll be great.
in 2027. Like,
but to like, to the one that I'm listening to right now is called The Strata. Mm-hmm. And oh, it's a cyberpunk podcast. I'm on the fifth season. They're just starting season 13. And it's a full cast, fully produced thing. And it really inspires me. It makes me want to get back into this medium. And yeah. Thank God you guys invited me on so I didn't have to go and do something by myself.
Yeah, and by the way, for the Strata, season 13 starts on the 11th of November.
Okay,
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's only 43 hours and 20 minutes right now.
But I mean, finding, you know, one of the things I stumbled into, and we'll get to this at the end of the show as well, because I want some recommendations from you. I was on the hunt for cyberpunk fiction. Mm-hmm. Because I had kind of run through not everything that's ever been printed, but I had done a pretty deep dive. Mm. And I was looking for something fresh, something new, something interesting. And the fact that you had a cyberpunk section, more or less, was wonderful for me. And some of them resonated with me, some of them didn't, but that was fine. It was great to go and find a place, just like the inspirational feeling that you had when you stumbled across the first blogs that you read, or the first fiction that you read online. Like, I remember stumbling across Old Man's War when it was still a blog,
He
was still publishing it online. And it was just this feeling of, I found something cool, and it's something that someone is doing just for the love of doing it. And you know, again, I will not begrudge anybody getting advertising on their podcast. There's a ton of it in the Strata, and I just, you know, I listen to it or I fast forward through it, but the stories are good. The world is immersive, and it does the thing that I needed to do, which is inspire me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. And it just speaking for myself, I live in a lucky time because I started podcasting years ago too. I was looking on an old website that I used to do a podcast for, the original Hyperlinked History. And I think it was 2007 when I started.
Yeah.
You know, at the time, I mean, I did everything myself from, the intro tune. I wrote the intro tune for it. I recorded the intro tune on a, Yamaha. I think it's a DGX 200. It's in my storeroom right now. And you know, did all of that work. And now at least I have a benefit, and I know that other, you know, podcasters doing fiction in this realm that want to have the music and the sound effects and the little extra bits that just, you don't have to have them, but by God, they do add something to the story that you can just go to, like, you know, Pixabay and find music, and you can go to Freesound and find sound effects. You're going to have to work to get them, but if you're smart about it, you'll download that stuff, you will tag it, you will hoard it, and you will make it as findable as possible, because sooner or later, you're going to need that goddamn gun sound again. Because this character hasn't switched guns, and I have that level of tism where it's like, well, it's the same gun, so it's got to have the same sound. Let's go find the same sound. But I don't have to pay for that. I don't have to... I don't have to put out money for a thing that is never going to make money. I never ask for money. I have no advertising. I have merch that no one buys. I have, I believe, the only two or three hats that have ever been bought from Redbubble for my shows because I wanted the hats.
That's literally
why they did it. So,
well, you know, Dan, you bring up, you know, that anybody can do this. And it's true. We've Chris, you mentioned Scott Sigler, who is a fucking machine. I know how Scott gets all of this stuff done. I would slip my wrists, but that boy can go crazy. Some of these newer ones that are coming out now with their full cast is while they can be done, they're just a lot harder, right?
Yes.
Because you can find all sound effects, but it's a matter of how do you do it? Mm-hmm. How do you layer them in such a way and make it sound that it's really compelling? And that's its own art form. So some of these people, like I'll give you an example. So I'm looking through my collection of cyberpunk, which I call Cyberpunk is Not an Instruction Manual, because I like clever names of things. I'm looking through this list, and I've favorited two shows that I love. And they're sitting right next to each other on the page right now. And one of them is called Sinkhole. And it's wild and immersive, and like it, I don't want to spoil anything away, but it is almost like a real time from the front lines of this sinkhole that has developed. And it is one person who does it all. And there's only one voice in the show, but they're not narrating to it. They're basically doing field reports, right?
Yeah.
One person, Cale Brown, is the one that does this show. And it is, I think it's lovely. I really enjoyed it. As my comment here is, if you thought single voice audio dramas were boring, you haven't listened to this show. The subtle background and ambience are paired perfectly with the audio reports. You'll dig it. Really like that show. Now, right next to it, in my list, is a show called Forest 404, which was produced by BBC Radio 4, which means it wasn't one person. It was the entirety of the BBC putting this thing together. It is amazing. The sound is great. What do I say about this one? This is an impressive audio storytelling adventure mixed with conversations with experts in soundscape episodes. So they do a cool little mix, like bonus episodes. And it helps the material trips all of my post-apocalyptic triggers. Binge it. So those two take up the exact same space in my brain because they're both great and they're vastly different. But that's the beauty of this medium is one doesn't have to sound like another. You don't have to, it's like going to the movies. And if you see something that is like, a single person on screen the entire time, you go, what the hell is this? Right. But that's not the way that it can work in audio fiction because some of these creators are so friggin' talented and have spent so much time because it's time that costs here. Not necessarily money. It's time is what they have to spend to get this so great. And I love them for doing it. In fact, I even love the ones that try and fail. That's fine. Yeah. Try and fail. You're not making money on this anyhow. Realistically, you're not. So just do it and have fun doing it. And maybe you'll make something that is just, mind-blowingly good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So as you're building this enormous catalog,
yeah,
are you seeing trends? Are you seeing things kind of come and go? Are there things that are picking up, things that are fading away? Are is one genre? Do you see genres swell and diminish?
It's kind of wild. Back when you and I were doing podiobooks.com, almost everything was science fiction, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was, surprise, that's who I knew and who I was reaching out to individually. And also back in the early aughts, people who write science fiction over-index on nerdiness, probably still today, and it took a little bit of nerdiness to happen. So, there was very little romance, for example, back in the early days of audio fiction. Now there's tons. There are entire production companies because I don't know if you guys know this or not, but romance is really popular.
It's huge.
Yeah. So now there are people who've recognized that and are filling these gaps that didn't exist previously. Like, I didn't know I could listen to these stories. And some of them you would classify as erotica. That's always been out there. But most of them now are just, rom-coms or standard classic love stories. It's amazing. One of the things I love about curating the end is, since I'm not creating anything, I'm just simply curating, is finding all of these new little weird niches that I didn't even knew existed. Like I'm going to find one example. I want to, where is the one that I was saying a minute ago? Oh, no. I just put one up that I kind of like. Oh, one is called Out of One, Many Voices, because I recognize that there are some shows, like some of the really popular ones. Are you familiar with the show Desert Skies?
No.
That sounds familiar. I know that I haven't listened to it, though.
It is a fantastic show. It's done by a guy named Jared Carter, who lives just south of me in Tucson, Arizona. Wonderful person. It is a full cast audio drama about the afterlife, spoiler. Except the full cast is Jared. He's just really good at voices.
Oh, I envy. Absolute freaking gut actually, level envy, man.
when he came up, we were going to go to convention together and we met for beers. And I said, I don't want you to sit down with me. I want Mac, the mechanic, to sit down with me. And so he just did it in Mac's voice the entire time, which is great. Oh, and then when he did a live reading of his first episode, and he just switched from character to character to character without missing a beat. And perfect every time. And of course, he puts in sound effects and music and all that, even better. So I wanted to highlight that. I wanted to highlight shows that sound like maybe that they are, well, actually all of these are, you know, because it's one person, but they've got many voices behind it and they work out amazingly well. There's an entire genre or classification or category, as I call it, that I'm calling It's Worse Than That, I'm Dead. And it's all from the point of view of, you know, the main character's dead. They're an unalive person. And like there's enough of those that are out there. There's been a huge resurgence in the epistolary format, you know, which is things told in a series of letters week after week. That's coming back. We're seeing new shows that come out. I mean, yeah, you've got R.E. Dracula and a few others like that that are just retelling the old stories. But there are new versions of that happening all the time that didn't. And they didn't really have a look. You're not going to sit and publish things in a newspaper one serial at a time like you did previously. And then there's a huge collection of things that are just reality, just fiction, not science fiction, not fantasy, not horror, not necessarily romance, just, you know, a story, you know, like movies and TV. They don't have to be about, you know, one. They're just real stories that are told. And gosh, those are some of my favorites that I really have in there. They can be thrillers, it can be whatever, but they're just, you know, all plausible stuff. Great.
Yeah.
I'm looking at some of these collections that you've got. These are really fun. I like the way you name these things. Struggling for Sanity, Work Sucks, We Know, Cyberpunk is Not an Instruction Manual, AI is Going Great.
Oh, my bias is showing there.
Can't See the Forest for the Trees. On the Hunt for Ghosts and Monsters, which is different than urban fantasy and cryptids.
Yep.
You Can't Shake a Spear at All These Classics,
which I appreciate.
I got Clever. That. Vampires Suck. It's Worse Than That, I'm Dead.
I love the one at the bottom. My one that shows with aliens, it's called ... But it's aliens, because, you know.
That's fantastic. So even sexy time. I see you even have sexy time in there.
Yeah,
so
I think we need more of that. I mean, because, look, there's a lot of erotica out there, and that's what's in there. But, you know, to me, it's a shame that I only have, like, you know, 13, whatever. No, I guess I got 18 shows that are in there. There's probably more. I just haven't found it yet. But I'm working
on it. And it's harder to get out there, too, because if you want – I mean, it's just a given that if you want the distribution, you have to put it on Apple Podcasts. You have to be there because that's just the de facto.
Yeah.
I mean, everything else is, it's Apple Podcasts and everything else. I mean, yeah, you can be on Spotify, but you have to be on Apple Podcasts. Yeah, you can be on Stitcher, but you have to be on Apple Podcasts. And Apple Podcasts ain't going to take your erotica.
No. I mean, they will now. They've really come full circle. I am
shocked, man. Because I remember when they threw Violet Blue off the platform.
Yep.
So,
yeah. Apple Podcasts showing
my age there. Hi.
Yeah.
Well, we can top you there. I remember I a friend of mine in Evo's Ray created iPodder X way back.
Ray Slakinski. Yeah.
Ray Slakinski. He created what I think may have been the first or second after iPodder.
Yeah. One of the very first. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Podcatching clients. And he was at the WWDC where they announced Apple Podcasts, and he watched his whole business model collapse.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was so sad, but I mean, I went on to work with him at Mahalo. He was great.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, so I guess that's neither here nor there, really. But
gentlemen, can we take a quick pause? Because one person has drank too much water and has to pee.
Yes, absolutely. Do that. Let's take a break.
Back to the show.
So, Evo, where do you see things going? I mean, I'm not asking you to foretell the future necessarily, but I mean, it seems like podcasting has kind of grown up in its way. And it's done the things that a lot of art does. Some of it siphons off and becomes part of the business world. Some of it remains scrappy and creative. Some of it is exploratory. Do you see a trend specifically for audio fiction? I mean, with things like Audible and Spotify and trying to turn things – how can I say this? If it doesn't have an RSS feed, it's not a podcast. But you see these companies trying to latch on, and so you can only get this podcast through this company.
Yeah.
What are you kind of seeing as, I mean, against your better judgment, a professional in the field?
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand the question. And, you know, my opinion on this changes, which must mean I'm pretty mature to do that, right? But my opinion changes all the time. What we saw, especially with Spotify in 2018, maybe 19, when they dropped like $750 million to become the second biggest podcasting client in the world at the time. And that's, by the way, true numbers and a true story. You look at what happened to Spotify right now, and they're not making their money back on that. Mm-hmm. Spotify makes their money by ripping off artists, right? We all know that. Yeah. So that's and they don't make any money from podcasting. I mean, they make some. They do have Megaphone as their ad serving platform, which they take between 50% to 30% of all the ads that are running on there. So that makes them probably some decent money, but I don't know that it's fully funded everything that they're doing, because, you know, it only works if it's on Megaphone. And we've seen other companies, you know, YouTube started it and now they're backed off from that, that were trying to, you know, angle in and say, look, we're going to just buy up these shows and we're going to make them available on our platform and our platform only. And that's the way it's going to be. But that's not working. And it's for one reason. There's no money in this. Mm-hmm. You know, people are spoiled for choice. You know, there are currently anywhere between 12,000 and 60,000 fiction podcasts. I don't know the exact number, but one of my fellow catalogers, audiofiction.co.uk, the Cambridge Geek, he has about 12,000 shows in his catalog. Mm-hmm. Now, not all of them are active. Not all of them are actually alive any longer, because it's hard to curate something that is that big, which is why I asked Chris to help me write some programs that would help with that, but it's a different topic. And then if you go to back to the podcast index, I'm friends with the people that run that. So I asked Dave one time to run a query and say, I just want to give me a list of how many podcasts. I don't want the individuals. I just want a total number of how many podcasts have a category of fiction. And it was 60,000. That was 3 years ago. So who knows what the number is right now.
Yeah.
But of course, a lot of those shows that have fiction as their, as a category, aren't really fiction. They might be about fiction. Like The Dragon Page was about fiction. And if we would have had fiction as a category at the time, we didn't, we would have categorized that. So I know that that's not the right number. So it's somewhere between 12 and 60,000 of shows that are out there. That's a lot of choice. And they are as equally available to anyone to listen to as the next podcast. That's not true for most media. It is hard to go and watch They Live, for example, which I just watched last night. God, I love that show. Mm-hmm. Wow, it's amazing how accurate it still is today. That's hard to do, because what platform is it on? You can't just go, you know, there's no blockbuster.com. Is it on Netflix? I don't know. Is it on Hulu? I don't know, right? That becomes very difficult to do. So those companies, I think, that work on those kind of media properties, they can corner the market. They can say, we're going to make this. If you want to watch Peacemaker, you got to get it only through us, Max, HBO Max, or whatever it is, right? But that's never going to work in podcasting. Never. We got Audible out there that's done its own thing, and Audible has fucked up podcasting for 20 years. They've missed so many goddamned opportunities. It makes my head spin. But business doesn't think that way about these kinds of things. So they were the only ones that could have done it, and they didn't. But now they're just out there. And so they're available. So I no longer worry like I used to worry that a lot of these things are going to get locked up behind a paywall. What we're seeing happen is shows get locked up behind a paywall and they don't make their money back. Mm-hmm. And then they have to, now suddenly then they put them back in full publication and release them with ads and like, okay, now they're making enough money at least to cover the expenses currently, right? For the larger shows. That's never the case for the little ones. So when you ask me the question of what do I see the future holding, I think it's going to stay distributed where there is not a, and I'm sorry, not distributed, decentralized. That's
there you go.
That's always been podcasting. We've seen a lot of pressure to go against that and pull things back. But I think the genie's out of the bottle, to use an old cliche. And I don't know that it's ever going to get back in. I don't worry about video. I used to worry about video. I used to advise my clients, you need to have a video plan. Now that's all bullshit because you don't. Those numbers are all made up. Nobody watches. Yep. Realistically, no one watches bad TV, which is what most YouTube shows are. There are exceptions to every rule, obviously, but that's not really a big deal. So I say it stays distributed. It stays weird if you want to be weird. Yeah. And it also stays plenty of good quality content if you want only the best, most highly produced things. There are plenty of shows out there. Realm still, you know, funding a whole lot of shows that are doing some really high quality work. The BBC hasn't stopped making content. All sorts of other companies you can think of that are continuing to do that. But there's still plenty of room for the little guy because it remains the most level playing field I can think of for content.
I agree. I rely on the, I think our old friend Matt Selznick would call it the punk ethos of podcasting. The idea, I remember once upon a time, me and another guy we used to know, we're going to start a podcast called Fuck Your Podcast. but I mean, the idea that anybody can spin one of these things up and get it out there. And yeah, getting ears is hard and vying for attention is hard.
Yeah.
But you know, you stay at it long enough, you will get an audience. It may be 20 people, it may be 200 people, it may be 20,000.
Yeah,
but exactly. It builds over time. You just have to, it's the staying power. That's the tricky bit.
You got to be in it for the long run.
Yeah.
If you're expecting immediate returns, go do something else. It's just not probably going to work out for you. Mm-hmm.
So I've got two things I want to cover before we end.
Oh, okay.
The first is related to podcasting, and the second one is not.
All right.
I think I want to do the one that's not first so that we can end on your recommendations.
Okay.
So I sent your Wikipedia entry, which is still cracks me up that I have a friend who has a Wikipedia entry. But I sent it to the group, and CoinOps came back and said, I need to know more about this beer diet. So could you regale us with that story before we get to your recommendations?
Yes, I can. First off, quick shout out to all of your listeners out there. If anybody can edit a Wikipedia page, please get in contact. Mine is so woefully out of date. I haven't lived in Bangkok since 2018. So please, let's fix that.
I was looking at this like, I haven't talked to Evo in like years, but even I know some of this shit is wrong.
Yeah. I think it's mostly accurate. It's just out of date for a lot of those things, right? So anyhow, so I don't know if you know this about me, guys, but I occasionally have these really weird ideas. And sometimes I have to get somebody to help me with those ideas. Sometimes I just do it all on my own. So years ago, I read an article in a magazine back when, you know, we had print magazines or when I read print magazines. And it was about a guy who for the entirety of Lent, what is that, 40 days, I think?
Yeah, 40 days.
He had a friend of his who is a home brewer brew him a special beer and he drank that beer and that's it. That is the only thing that passed through into his gullet was that beer for the entirety of Lent. And, and so I was intrigued by that. But the problem was he drank that one beer, which was a brown ale, which is a good beer, but arguably perhaps one of the most boring beers you could possibly get. So I said, well, I like this idea, but problem number one is I can't just drink one kind of beer. That's going to get boring on the palate pretty quickly. And the second problem is he did it for Lent, and that's not me. I am the opposite of religious, right? So I'm an atheist since I was 7 years old. So nope, can't do the religion. So I am, but I'm still intrigued. And one of my best friends, who is still a bariatric surgeon, so he is a weight loss physician. This is what he does now professionally, and he's also a trained virologist and all sorts of crazy stuff. One of the smartest skeptical people that I know on the planet. Very, very good friend of mine. I'm over at his place, smoking a cigar, drinking
beer. That sounds great too. I mean, tell me about that.
Yeah, Roush. Roush is a great opportunity to get a beer. But no, we're chatting and, you know, random things come up and I share this story and I say, you know, I'm thinking about doing this, but I'm going to do it with different kinds of beer and maybe just for a month. And he said, don't. So why not? So, well, you're going to lose muscle mass, right? Like there's not enough protein. You need at least 30 grams of protein a day to maintain your muscle mass. He said, but that's fine. Just put a couple of sausages in it and for it every day. And let's do it over the month of October. We'll call it the Oktoberfest diet. I think that's what he wanted to call it. And he said, and you know, we don't have any good data about this. Why don't we do this? And then you come into my office every single week and I'll give you an exam. We'll do blood work. We'll do full physical tests, all the various stuff. And let's just see what happens. Because the worst thing that can happen is I start to see negative results on your lab work, Evo, and you will just simply stop because that's all we have to do, right? What's the worst that can happen? Under guided supervision, let's try this thing. And I said, you're a friggin' genius. Let's do it. Let's start like next week because it was October, like coming up right away. So yeah, I went into my place of employment at the time, and this was back when I used to work in advertising. And I was a VP at this advertising agency, and I went into the owners and I said, I have this idea, but it is going to require me to drink beer at the office, which I knew wasn't going to be a huge problem because we had a keg in the office that was my job to keep filled. And I did religiously on that one. The good news is advertising has a rich history of drinking on the job. So they said, sure, why not? It's like, why would I not do this thing, right? Although, also, my kid, NJ, who's 34 now, at the time was like 16 or 17 years old. So like, ooh, built-in driver. And so it began. And I did it for the entire month of October. The only calories that entered my body was beer or sausage. I'd have black coffee to keep, you know, kind of the hunger pains down. And then I kept track of everything that I ate, everything that I drank. And at the end of this month, I should say this, you know, again, I went in to go see Terry Simpson, Dr. Terry Simpson. He actually is the one of the, well, don't spoil the story, you know. I went to see him, like I said, at the beginning, you know, every week went in, we did blood work, all the various things. Here's what happened. At the end of the 30 days, I could have kept going, but my wife said, no, you need to drive a car one of these days. and also, no. And I had lost 15 pounds. Damn. My bad cholesterol dropped by half and my overall cholesterol dropped by a third. During the blood tests, my liver enzymes, lipids, whatever they call those things, never moved off baseline. Not once. So you looking at my blood work, I was just healthier. Looking at my weight, I was just healthier at the end of that 31 days than I was previously, which was pretty frigging amazing.
Not bad.
Yeah. So everybody asks, well, how'd you feel? Right? That's the question I get. So what was it like? And I said, every day I was a little drunk and a little hungry. For a month.
Yeah.
My body, probably the people I had at the worst were the people who worked for me at this agency. I was in charge of the media team. And apparently by day six, I had transformed into what they call an asshole. Yeah, I guess it had been a steady slope down, but day six was like the day that it like broke all of the records and whatnot. But here's the good news. That's also the day that my body said, fine, you win. I'm not going to yell at you anymore, other than make you think you're a little bit hungry all the time. After that first 6 days, the rest was a cakewalk. And I repeated it the next year. I did it again the next year, and I was much more smart about how I did my drinking. You know, like my 10 a.m. beer, which was my second beer of the day. I had a breakfast beer, and then at 10 o'clock was my next beer. I decided to not make that triple IPA my 10 a.m. beer, which really helped me.
See the wisdom behind that. Sure, yeah.
Nothing like just staring at your screen for like 3 hours and realizing, I shouldn't have done that. Yeah, so didn't do that. Made some better choices, and actually I lost 20 pounds the next year. That I did it. Wow. Because I was much more adherent to the caloric intake I did. And the reason I lost weight, it's math, I am a full-size man, and I burn roughly 2,200 calories just, you know, being alive every single day. I only put 1,500 calories in. That's a 700-calorie deficit over the course of 30 days. Guess what? You will, period. End of story. Lose weight if you continually to put less calories in your body than your body burns. It's great.
Important to note, he did this under a doctor's supervision.
Yeah.
Be careful if you try this at home, or maybe don't.
Yeah. Dude, you know. I have
don't
a friend.
Do a triple IPA.
I have a friend who owns his own advertising agency, not far from me. He has been doing this every year. I just found out. Huh. He still does it. He did it last month. I was just out riding bikes and drinking beer with him yesterday. And his wife said, yeah, of course, he's still fucking doing it every October.
Nice. Well, it's good to have traditions, you know?
I guess so.
So I wanted to wrap it up with recommendations. You have this massive catalog of podcasts, and our folks, you know, we're mostly a bunch of nerds, art nerds, tech nerds, you know, it kind of runs the gamut here.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if you had some recommendations for us, because I'd love to be able to point some people at the things in your catalog for them to go and enjoy.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you a general suggestion, and then I'm going to get some specific suggestions. Mm-hmm. So right now, listener, if you go to theend.fyi and you look at any of the pages that are on there, you're going to see some books that are listed as a fan favorite. Fan favorites, 99% of the time, that means me. I am the fan. We do have some others that have added some content in there, but there are certain shows of mine. Certain shows that I really enjoy. And you can, if you go into the website under Explore the Directory, you're going to see a link that says, what are the best fiction podcasts and audio dramas? And those are everything that has been classified by me or possibly somebody else as good quality, enjoyable, listen with confidence. Right now, there are, God, how many do I have on this page? That's 200, that's 300. Yeah, there's like 300 or so that have listeners. You're gonna have plenty of content. So if you don't want to run the risk of getting something that maybe is not the best audio quality in the world, because look, I'm not selecting shows to be in the catalog based on quality. Quality is in the ear of the beholder in this case. And there are some fantastic shows out there that are really, really well written, but didn't have the same kind of production value. And maybe that's not your thing. If you want to stay away from those, if you want to just be assured that you're going to listen to something that at least one person thinks sounds really good, just go into the best category and you'll see those. But let's get specific, because you guys have talked about cyberpunk. So let's talk a bit about cyberpunk. And I gave a couple of recommendations before, but I'm going to get very specific here and talk about just a few of them. You know, as soon as I can figure out where the hell happened to my cyberpunk page, where is it? Oh, there it is. Because it moves around on my page. It's sorted by which one had the most recent activity in it. Okay. Cyberpunk shows that I absolutely love. As I mentioned previously, there's Sinkhole. And I really think you guys should listen to it. It had a 12-hour run across two seasons, still waiting on the third season. I hope she comes back, or they come back, excuse me, to do this, because, you know, that would be really good. I want to see the ending of it. I mentioned Forest 404, also a good fan favorite. But there's two other ones I want to talk about. One is by, it's called Unleashed, and it is a very professional production. It is done by a company called, Podium Podcast, I believe, is who did that one, but with some super top notch. This one, it was originally first released as a Spanish podcast, and it got Podcast of the Year for elevating the genre of audio fiction in the 2023. I'm not even trying to pronounce their name because my Spanish is terrible. So, wonderful, wonderful show. I really, really liked this show. The idea behind it is, well, you know, I'm not going to spoil the idea. I'm going to tell you what I said about it, because it's cyberpunk, so that's good enough for you. What I said is, this is simply an outstanding listen. The story is fabulous. The acting is spot on, and the soundscaping puts you right in the action. And it's a little more than quite chilling due to its similarities to real life, e.g. politics. Unleashed is the name of that show, and it is really amazing. The one I listened to the most recently that I fell in love with was this much shorter show, only 3 hours and 47 minutes. So I think, like, you know, a movie that's too long, but this is better. 9 episodes. It's called Burnout. Burnout. And it's produced by a company called Alternative Stories. And I know a lot of the work. I like a lot of the Alternative Story stuff, but man, this one really gripped me. It's about zero-G racing and crime and cyberpunk altogether.
Ooh.
What a weird combo, right? Yeah, I care nothing about racing, but damn, I was really, really intrigued by this show. In fact, that's what I say. Cyberpunk, racing, and organized crime all in one show? Sign me up. This fast-paced multi-timeline tale, too, so it's like Pulp Fiction, right, is absolutely riveting, and the sound design and performances are excellent. So, Burnout by Alternative Stories and written by Lewis Carter. Great, great content.
Excellent. And I should note that on all of your pages, you've got links to not only the RSS feed, but Apple Podcasts, any place that this shows up, if I remember
pretty much
correctly,
right? just about everywhere. I mean, because it's not everybody listens to the same thing. So many podcasters will just share, hey, here's my link to the show on Apple Podcasts, and you figure it out after that. No, I don't buy that. I think that's just a mistake. So yeah, if it's available on Apple Podcasts, it's listed. If it's in the podcast index, that means it's listed on a whole bunch of other services and sites. Some of them are listed on YouTube, not all of them. Mm-hmm. So I got a link to that if they're there. Spotify, if they're on Spotify. So yeah, they're all there. And there's also a copy, click to copy the RSS feed so you can just add it right away.
Very nice. Very cool. Well, thank you, Ivo. I really appreciate you coming out and hanging out with us for a little while and, you know, talking to us about all of this. You've got a breadth of experience in this area that I think a lot of people don't realize a person could have. We don't realize how long we've been at this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And how things evolve and change and how rich the content field is out there. So I'm really appreciative of you coming in and sharing it with us.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me on to share all this with your lovely peoples.
On that note, I guess we're out. So, you know, go listen to a podcast, would you?
Hey, it's the Low Life Podcast.
Do you know anything about that?